Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Even though severe cases can be rare, respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is still the leading cause of hospitalization in babies under one. RSV often begins like a cold or the flu, but can quickly spread to your baby's lungs. Ask your doctor about preventative antibodies for your baby this season, and visit protectagainstrsv.com. The information presented is for general educational purposes only. Please ask your healthcare provider about any questions regarding your health or your baby's health.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined by Connor for the very first time, and I'm Josh. So what we're going to be talking about today is who should be purged from the right, which is a great topic for your Contemplations debut to start and already burn a ton of bridges.
Yeah, particularly hot off the heels of Harry and I covering Michael Knowles' book where we said right-wingers need a form of non-violent repressive tolerance. Let's pick our targets, shall we?
Yes. So obviously I'm going to have to say this, and this is kind of annoying and demeaning, but yes, these are my own views that I'm talking about here in Contemplations, and also your views are your own. We're not talking for our colleagues, and I imagine some of them would probably object to some of the groups we've included here. I haven't consulted with them. I'm just doing this of my own volition. So don't have a go at anyone else if you don't like what I say. It's probably on me. So with that out of the way, it's also worth mentioning, I don't necessarily think that isolating your political allies is a good idea from a political strategy point of view. That's not why I'm doing this, obviously. Friends in politics tend to be pretty few and far between, and particularly when you're on our fringe of politics, it makes sense not to do this. However, I'm still going to do it because I find it interesting.
Well, I believe speaking with Callum a couple of days ago on the podcast, I pointed out how at Kemi Badenoch's launch party at the House of Lords, they invited Shara Ali, the former deputy leader of the Green Party. And the reason is he was ejected from the Green Party because he wasn't on board with the trans issue. But I debated him at Sussex University and he endorsed carbon social credit limits. And so they're welcoming him with open arms just because he has a pair of eyes and can define what a woman is, which is a really low bar for the right now. Mm-hmm. But he would endorse authoritarian climate policies, which would immiserate the lot of us, and you're essentially handing down the ladder. So I do think with a little gatekeeping is needed in order to put forward a cohesive mm-hmm. conservative vision rather than just being on the back foot and defensive against the march of the left for the institutions.
Absolutely. And it's also worth mentioning that just evaluating the broad web that is the sort of disparate sort of dissident right is useful in both establishing who's helping the cause the most, what issues they're good at, and also understanding our own side can help us kind of better achieve our political aims. That's a bit of reflexivity and reflectiveness, I think, is what's needed. And we don't do this enough because most people don't want to upset. They don't want to rock the boat, do they?
I'm notorious for that.
Let's stop complaining about how much I'm going to get pushback and actually look at some of the stuff that's worth covering. So this is sort of low-hanging fruit, this first one. I mean, they're not exactly an intellectual titan of a movement. And also, it's worth mentioning that it's mostly meme, but there are people who do buy into this, and it is insufferable. And that is the sort of Sigma male grindset or hustle culture. And how are they of the right, you might say? This doesn't really seem like a right-wing thing at all. It just seems like an internet meme. Well, in that they're portraying being uber capitalist, even though they're quite often supportive of being capitalist, as this sort of chasing selfishness, you only focus on yourself, get more money, that sort of thing. Whereas most of the time they're probably working at McDonald's, slinging burgers, and they're talking about having this great game about capitalism, dedicating all their time to self-improvement, all of this stuff, which are kind of tropes that are of the right, and it draws in people who are right-wing, who want to better themselves. It's the sort of people who might go to a Jordan Peterson lecture. They're
I'm
more
offended.
Willing. I'm not saying that there's a large overlap, no. But there's just a similarity in interest. Yeah. Obviously, they manifest differently. But yes, the fact that they're making being pro-market look bad is the main reason I'm...
Well, it's almost like a performative Randianism, because you said they act in self-interest, and that's sure, but the truly Sigma self-interested man who is meant to be dedicated to his own self-improvement and earning a living and being detached from sort of social superficial affairs wouldn't be posting memes and creating social media accounts to show just how Sigma male I am by projecting my image to the wider world. But I do think accidentally they've been folded into the right, not just because they're the kind of uber libertarians. They'd almost, if the Simpsons updated their Republican Party caricature where they meet in a haunted castle, the crypto bro would be sitting at the end of the table. But it's because I think it's, what's the word for when you look like your behavior? It's like the twits. It was you and Carl did a is it physiognomy?
It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy of your physical appearance.
Yes. So just self-improvement by the nature of having standards. I mean, look at your average Antifa march or your fat activist march. They are very clearly of the left, and therefore they've put themselves in this box. Now they're of the right just by the fact of they're dedicated to self-improvement.
Mm-hmm. And of course, things like self-improvement, going to the gym, now signs of white supremacy. So,
yeah, we'll tell that to Ronnie Coleman.
But yes, just to clarify what this is, I'm going to read a short extract, which is kind of summarizing what this meme is. So, from this article from, I think it's Dazed, which tend to be pretty crap, to be honest. But it starts, wake up, 2 a.m, take a cold shower, eat breakfast, 12 eggs and a side of raw milk, workout, no warm-up, check crypto wallet for Bitcoin stocks, listen to an audiobook rendition of Nietzsche's Thus Spoke Zarathustra. I am the Ubermensch you utter between gulps of fermented fish guts. No, this isn't the diary of an on-screen sociopath. In fact, it's the imagined schedule of a Sigma male, the latest socio-sexual identity to take over the internet. The nebulous term is meant to describe someone who's the paragon of masculinity. Having broken the binaries of the Chad Alpha and the Virgin Beta, he is the wolf without a pack, operating outside of the social system and hierarchies. Already it sounds so lame, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you're also not operating outside the hierarchies. You're just trying to climb to the top of the dominance hierarchy, but without cooperation. Yes. Also, it reminds me of a really cringeworthy adaptation of either Benjamin Franklin's diaries or the ones that Benjamin Franklin's diaries were adapted for The Great Gatsby to be Gatsby's diaries. Mm-hmm. But also the great irony of that is if you look at like Jordan Belfort as well, Leo DiCaprio's characters, they're meant to be sometimes these self-improvement titans, but ultimately they fall down flat because they end up simping. And I guarantee these exact kind of guys will do that. They'll project this image out into the world of oh yeah, I don't need anyone, etc. And meanwhile, they're spending most of their salary on ego feet pics.
I 100% agree with that. And there's also an element of it that just like, yes, I'm not part of the hierarchy. Well, that more often than not, that means that there's no social feedback to your own kind of self-evaluated position. You might see yourself as this so-called Sigma male, which is really lame. And then you'll be like a loser to everyone else. And because you don't interact with anyone else, because you don't judge yourself based on the pre-established hierarchies, well, you can live comfortably in a delusion as a form of cope in your lack of high status, sorry.
Well, until you become so unsuccessful when a crash hits, and rather than falling back on a family to coax you through your economic hardships, you'll be the first one stepping out of the office window and onto the pavement because you've got no support network around you. So I don't think it's the most stable thing in the world.
Yeah, and these sorts of things, although obviously mostly meme, mostly people just having fun, there is an element of this, and it's the sort of work culture at any cost that I kind of want to push back on as well, which is more of a broad thing, like this view that you see banded around quite a lot online, actually, that if you don't spend all of your day being productive, then you're somehow failing in your duty as...
I am guilty of that, that sort of pathological puritanism, even though brought up Catholic, so I should technically be the other way, but it's the guilt that drives me. I often said to my girlfriend, who keeps telling me to sit down and relax because she gets annoyed that I fidget so much, I almost don't know how to swim unless I feel like I'm drowning. But that's a sort of genuine internal thing rather than, and it's a character flaw as well, I don't make a personality out of it, rather than this, which is utterly performative. Because if you're posting this schedule, I mean, for example, where in your schedule is constantly update Twitter with memes at how successful I am on my lunch break at Burger King?
Oh dear, yeah, it's insufferable. And I'm going to go a bit overboard in debunking this whole paradigm as well, because it annoys me. It's all performative, and it's the kind of stuff that can poke fun at people posting stuff, self-aggrandizing on social media, but then we'll do the same thing with internet memes and their entire identity elsewhere. It just doesn't make any sense. Moving on, the fact that they don't value spare time is really stupid, because obviously working on behalf of someone else all the time, constantly to earn money, well, that doesn't make you dominant in a social hierarchy. That makes you subservient. It's a weird view that somehow working this job 60 hours, 80 hours a week on behalf of probably making profit for someone else. If you're self-employed, fair enough, but most people aren't.
Yeah.
And therefore it's ridiculous. Obviously free time is important. It serves lots of important psychological functions. It reduces stress. I mean, you can get objective measures of blood pressure, heart rate. It's all healthier once you've had some free time. If you want to die early and take your money to the grave, work all the time. That'll be a good way of doing it. Obviously, it's just good for your well-being in general as well, not just the physical side of things, but psychologically. And the final aspect of this is, if you have no time to enjoy the fruits of your labor, why are you even working in the first place?
It's about the locus of meaning in your life. If you're placing it all in your work and the sort of perpetual profiteering, then you might be hedonistically comfortable. You might be able to afford sort of lavish surroundings. But you're living a sort of empty, shallow and purely materialist existence. I think you do need an anchor, not to the divine necessarily, but to something that drives all of the reason for your struggle. It needs to be something existentialist rather than just a hamster spinning.
Yes. And I think that people who buy into this also buy into the sort of boomer truth of your work defines who you are. And I mean, to some extent, it's unavoidable that that's the case. However, you don't have to make it your entire identity as well. Just being a cog in a machine is not really very liberating, and actually it's very harmful to having your own self-confidence, because if you are to stand on your own two feet, you kind of need to feel like you have some backing in terms of, you know, your culture, your virtues, these sorts of things, and these aren't often fostered in the same way that might be most beneficial it just doing a day-to-day job.
Yeah, you don't want your self-worth to be moment-to-moment conditional on the figure in your bank account, because, say, the government decides to drive up 10% inflation, then suddenly your self-worth plummets because the grind is all for naught. Instead, you want a meaningful support network to surround you to fall back on when hard times hit.
Absolutely. And I wanted to go on a kind of pointless tangent, but it's one that I really want to go on because it annoys me, and it's this illusion of this alpha and beta and this sigma male thing. Like, this doesn't really exist. It's not a real psychological phenomenon, especially in humans. Obviously that the terms came from wolves, but I'm going to prove to you that it doesn't even apply to them, just to be unnecessarily controversial.
Okay, go on.
So yes, the idea of an alpha in general comes from Rudolf Schenkel, an animal behaviorist who in 1947 published a research paper titled The Expression Studies on Wolves, and he studied wolves in captivity in Switzerland's Basel Zoo rather than wolves in the wild. And you can start to see the problem here already, of course, that, well, their behaviour is going to be very different in a zoo than it's going to be in the wild. From what he saw, he believed that the wolves lived in social hierarchies with a top dog, an alpha. And these captive wolves were made up of unrelated wolves. However, the problem here is that packs of wolves in the wild are familial units. They're not these lone, sigma male types, all these alpha male types, their families, which is like a quintessentially conservative thing. I mean, family values, that sort of thing. And actually, in talking about things in terms of alpha males and beta males and all of that sort of stuff, you're actually shooting yourself in the foot if you're a right winger, because where this language comes from, it's actually to do with the family.
Yeah.
And that's actually a much stronger point to make, that actually the family unit is the one that is the most important, rather than being this isolated male who's just thrown into a system, a cog in a machine, all on your own, basically worthless. That's not a very good view, even in a satirical sense, to view a person. And it's certainly not something to aspire to. Although I think obviously there's lots of memes around it, people do, to a certain extent, buy into this sort of stuff, and it's not helpful to people's self-worth or their the perception that they give off to other people either.
Well, it almost shifts things from... Well, I remember when Jordan Peterson was talking about the difference between dominance and competence hierarchy and why he moved his language to competence. But it almost moves it back to dominance, because rather than a hereditary hierarchy, you have a socially engineered conditions that reframe the hierarchy to one of competition. But if you're not going to cooperate and you're purely out for selfish means, you are trying to get one over on the other, particularly with the reference to Nietzsche, for example, of where you're meant to be this indomitable but individual Übermensch gracing against other Übermensches, and then you reach the evolutionary apotheosis. So yeah, it does hollow out how humans are meant to be organized into more smaller parochial little platoons, as Edmund Burke would say. That being said, though, I do enjoy calling the BuzzFeed people soy boy beta cucks.
That's
so
fine.
I'm going to cling on to that.
Well, to be fair, that you're reaching to something tangible, though, because they're not living up to values of masculinity, are they? So that's something tangible and real. And I'd also like to make a point about, you talked about the difference between competence hierarchies and dominance hierarchies. My view is that it's very rare to actually have true meritocracies, to have a competence hierarchy in place in the first place. And I would say 9 times out of 10, it's a dominance hierarchy, because sometimes people can hold a dominant position without necessarily being the most competent.
Yep.
And this happens all the time. You can use your already established resources, normally money, to get a position which, had it been an even playing field, you wouldn't be able to maintain. And when you say it like that, it seems entirely obvious. But it's worth mentioning that competence is not the thing that dictates how you move up the hierarchy necessarily, although it's loosely related, I would say.
It's more aspirational, because we should seek to, if we want an operational society without things like unfair prejudices, then yes, competence is the thing to strive to base your hierarchies on. The problem is, and I'm going to quote from Burke again, it's the idea that every man's prejudices are the things he falls back on because his own private stock of reason is not enough. The prejudices are a form of inherited wisdom. Some are right, some are wrong. But we're all human, we're all imperfect. Therefore, we need to sometimes go with this inherited knowledge and just sort of hope it works. And sometimes you are allowed to be prejudiced and play favorites. You shouldn't do it on the basis of immutable characteristics, but hereditary nepotism does happen, and to sever the bonds of family, it's almost impossible to expect someone to do so.
And to kind of psychologize what you were saying and to kind of back it up loosely, it's this view of you have different decision-making pathways, sort of conscious ones that are deliberate, demand lots of cognitive resources, some that are unconscious and almost automatic, and it's more leaning towards that automatic, leaning into the prejudices. But of course, if you did everything consciously, the cognitive demand on you and the time demand would be so great that it would be so impractical. You'd be damaging yourself far more doing that than the actual benefits of taking deliberate actions and steps towards your decisions. But to finish off what I was saying about the wolves, the packs of wolves, family units, obviously the parents are higher status in that hierarchy. And when the cubs become old enough, they become displaced from their packs and then form a new pack with a wolf of the opposite sex to start their own family. So it's actually quite analogous to, you know, your nuclear family in the West. This whole alpha, beta, sigma stuff is just mapped on nonsense. It's this kind of these stratified categories that people put human beings into boxes. It bugs me to no end. One thing that I really despise is using generational terminology like Gen X, boomers, millennials.
I did see your podcast on that, yes.
And it just doesn't make any sense because, of course, it's a continual spectrum. You're not just born, okay, everyone's born in this narrow window of time. People aren't born like frogs. You're not spawned all at the same time in massive batches. So to have them put in these discrete categories rather than this long continuous thing, you lose a lot of the nuance. And what you do is you bring the associations with some of these categories, like, millennials are always selfish and on their phones. Well, you're bringing that presumption to the observed behavior in the world, and therefore you're going to color your own understanding of the objective reality of the situation. I think I'm particularly sensitive to this because my background is an experimental psychologist. If you're designing research, you go to anything with a presumption, then you're going to affect your outcome, and therefore it's bad. But I think that philosophy is actually very useful just in general life, because it allows you to approach things with a bit more of an open mind and therefore see them for what they really are, rather than bringing these presumptions, which these categories bring with a little bit of baggage. And I wish we could do away with them entirely, but this is in no way related to anything that we're covering today. I just wanted to have a bit of a rant.
No, it's worthwhile. Go for it.
But yes, obviously, social hierarchy in humans are not organized into these categories. You can also talk of things in social dominance, but it's also contingent on which domain you're in as well, which often gets overlooked. So you could say that Floyd Mayweather may be dominant in a boxing ring, but he would not be dominant in a book reading.
No, neither Mike Tyson.
And to be annoying and explain the joke, 50 Cent offered Mayweather $750,000 to give that to charity if he read one page from Harry Potter, and Mayweather refused. So that's why I used him as an example there. Obviously, because he can't read. But yes, that's pretty much why I wanted to include that, because it's got a low resolution vision of human hierarchy. It makes self-improvement and being free market look bad. And these are things that are definitely of the right, even if some of the people talking about it aren't necessarily, but people do still buy into it as well. Is there anything else you wanted to add before
no,
I move on
not,
to...
not that I can think of to add to that.
Okay. This is probably the most egregious category, in my opinion, and this is the war hawks, if you're American, or warmongers. And there are plenty of those around, and I would probably say that I'm opposed to war in most situations, unless it's blowing up ISIS, in which case it's retaliation.
Yes.
I'm not against self-defense, but going around interfering with other people's countries seems not to work.
No.
As we can kind of see from legacies of the Cold War in Latin America. In the Middle East is probably that's the best example, really, isn't it? Afghanistan, Iraq. Yeah. These sorts of countries goes to show that intervention doesn't really work.
And you go in under false pretenses, you send someone else's son off to war, they get blown up, they die for a meaningful reason they believe in their heads, but is not the reason that all the congressmen decided to mm-hmm. ship them out and profiteer off their backs. It's utterly reprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have someone running for the Conservative Leadership Contest, probably out by tonight's vote, Tom Tugendhat, who decided to attend the Bilderberg Summit last month with Henry Kissinger, Michael Gove, and David Lammy. And it's like, I'm sure you're not going to divvy up the the profit from the Ukrainian war among yourselves and your friends.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this is one of the areas, actually, that things are actually getting better, in that I think the concept of foreign wars has become a bit unpopular amongst the right. And now, actually, the left, particularly with Ukraine, are the ones that are cheering on them on the most and want the most intervention, which is a very strange flip of things, whereas they were most associated with peace.
They were most associated with peace. I think it's just because during the Cold War, they were mm-hmm. opposing oppositional nations that were themselves socialist mm-hmm. and communist. So you had a divide with the new left who disagreed with things like Vietnam and the intervention there on the purely liberal grounds. Mm-hmm. But then you had the authoritarian leftists who were in the academy, like C. Wright Mills, who mm-hmm. said, why have you abandoned your commitments to Stalinism just because it went wrong? We should be doubling down mm-hmm. on nations like Cuba, etc.
I was only talking about the perception in wider public, not necessarily my view, because I know deep down they all want to burn everything to the ground.
True.
So I am not going to take that position, but yes, also the Vietnam War was wrong.
Yep,
I'm just going to throw that out there.
Controversial take, John.
I know. Who'd have thought? But yes, as you mentioned, Liz Truss is a perfect example of someone like this. So here we have a BBC article. This is from the 27th of February. This we covered on the podcast, I think, titled Liz Truss backs people from the UK who want to fight. And then if we move on to the next article, Russia blames Liz Truss and others for nuclear alert. And then we move on to the next article. Liz Truss now says Britain should not fight in Ukraine. And then if we move on to the next article, Liz Truss risks recklessly inflaming Ukraine's war to serve her own ambition. This is coming from The Guardian, and yeah. I agree with it. If you're getting called out by The Guardian and it actually holds water, you're doing something wrong here.
I mean, government incompetence has set such a low bar these days that even these clowns can get it right.
I know. And if we move on to the next one, just to hammer this point home, Liz Truss speaks to Ukraine about Britain's death sentences for fighting Russia. I mean, fighting Russia, yeah, that's right.
This is why you don't become pawns for an ideological goal, because mm-hmm. you can get swept up in the mob mentality that Hannah Arendt talked about, and that as soon as you're part of a group, your individual responsibility becomes devolved to the cause that the people marching in the streets or obviously shipping overseas as a Reddit battalion decides to do. But as soon as that group gets dissolved, as soon mm-hmm. as something starts fractionating, then you're all on your own and you got to stand down, mm-hmm. face down the barrel of a gun and see if the ideological convictions you march yourself out there really stand up to scrutiny.
Yeah. I believe a couple of days before we've actually recorded this video, and this is long before it actually goes out, I think they were an aid worker who's died in captivity in Donbass, wasn't it?
Right.
So yes, obviously very dangerous. Encouraging people to go over there, I mean, this is obviously irresponsible. This is not what we want from our statespeople, because of course she knew in the end that it wasn't a good idea, but then she was the one that was willing to encourage people to go over there, throw their lives away, and only walking it back when it was politically expedient to do so.
Yeah, well, I know at least one guy, and then I know a few other TV personalities as well, that have gone out to volunteer at things like refugee centres in Poland in the early days of the war. And obviously, even if you dislike Vladimir Zelensky's fairly corrupt regime as much as you dislike Vladimir Putin's, the people of Ukraine don't deserve this. So
absolutely,
what she could have said instead is, how about you create a charity drive? How about you, if you have the means and are able to, go over to one of the neighboring safe NATO partnered countries and help the refugees fleeing there? But instead, no, just sacrifice your lives to the current thing.
Mm. And that is something I very much agree with, actually, in that it's a far better case to make to be in a safe European, well, safe-ish
yeah.
European country bordering Ukraine, helping the refugees who are probably the true victims of this whole yeah. conflict, than going out and fighting it yourself. Because in reality, you're going to be thrown into the front, not being able to speak, you know, Ukrainian. You're not really that useful to them. So they're going to just throw you away as pawns. You're going to be cannon fodder, a distraction at best.
I think it's also a sort of misguided historicism. So you see this a lot where Boris Johnson said, oh, he wants his place in history, right, for doing three terms. I think they're seeing a crisis scenario and in some vainglorious, egotistical sense, pushing themselves to the forefront. So Liz Truss is saying, oh, we've got to get Britain massively involved. And every time she's on the Conservative leadership debate stage, she says how she's handled the crisis really well. Well, on a microcosmic level as well, each of these individual servicemen or Redditors even goes out there and hopes that they'll be fighting for the cause. And they think that they're going to come back with war stories and they're going to have that thing of where the son's sitting on the floor and the daughter's on the knee and, Daddy, where were you when they took up arms and that? So I remember the Reddit wars. No, it's this vain attempt to cement yourself in history because of the belief that history is going in one particular direction towards the utopia. Mm-hmm. And if you're the hero of the utopia, well, won't you love it walking through a park with all the statues built to you?
Yeah. And my main point for bringing this whole thing up is that it doesn't really age very well, and the optics are terrible, because you're more or less sending people to their death unnecessarily, would be my opinion. And this of course happens in the United States as well, with people like Dan Crenshaw.
Yep.
And also you drew my attention to this guy, where this article's titled, "There's no dollar amount limit to our Ukraine spending," which is a terrifying prospect. The worst thing any fiscally responsible elected official should be saying. So I'm just going to read the byline quickly. Republican Senator Kevin Cramer told Charlie Kirk during a live segment of a show that there is no dollar amount that is too much to send in Ukraine spending.
I mean, that's just insane considering then you can't make the argument at home against the socialists who say, why don't we just subsidize everything, including people who are unwilling to work, having a universal basic income. But part of this is just war profiteering. I don't know if you saw that a week before Russia actually invaded, they had briefings over in the States. And even Marjorie Taylor Greene, who a lot of people on the right think is a sort of anti-political correctness hero for bringing a weapon into Congress as a concealed carry and bringing impeachment proceedings against Biden, she bought stocks in Lockheed Martin and energy companies, same with Crenshaw, etc. So these people are using insider information and stoke the wars and then go on to profit off of it. I mean, Naomi Klein's shock doctrine has some stupid conclusions, but her analysis of the reason the Iraq war was started, and then suddenly you see things like McDonald's popping up on airbases because they've got partnerships, or Joe Biden's brother having all of the contracts to rebuild houses in the aftermath, it's obvious that these people were happy to put their own citizens' lives on the line just so they can secure contracts and make a quick buck on the side.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Even when you're playing music, you're always listening to your baby, especially when RSV is on your mind. Beyfortus, nirsevimab ALIP, is the first and only long-acting preventative antibody that gives babies the RSV antibodies they lack. Beyfortus is a prescription medicine used to help prevent serious lung disease caused by RSV or respiratory syncytial virus in babies under age 1, born during or entering their first RSV season, and children up to 24 months who remain at risk of severe RSV disease through their second RSV season. Your baby shouldn't receive Beyfortus if they have a history of serious allergic reactions to Beyfortus, nirsevimab ALIP, or any of its ingredients. Tell your baby's doctor about any medicines they're taking and all their medical conditions, including bleeding or bruising problems. Serious allergic reactions have happened. Get medical help right away if your child has any of the following signs or symptoms of a serious allergic reaction, such as swelling of the face, mouth, or tongue, difficulty swallowing or breathing, unresponsiveness, bluish color of skin, lips, or under fingernails, muscle weakness, severe rash, hives, or itching. Most common side effects include rash and pain, swelling, or hardness at their injection site. Individual results may vary. Ask your baby's doctor about Beyfortus. Visit Beyfortus.com or call 1-855-BEYFORTUS.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.